Welcome to the show, Curious on Life, the podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Guevara-Wingler. I'm an artist. I'm a certified and creative life coach. And I'm the creator of Color Language of the Soul virtual watercolor workshops, where we delve deep into creative and emotional expression. I said yes to something bigger right at midlife. I believe we're meant to feel good and be the highest version of ourselves. On this podcast, we discuss creative transformation at any age and at any stage. There's curiosity around social norms for women, around aging, romance, alcohol, cultural expectations, and ancient wisdom. Curious? Stick around. So I've got the lovely Raquel Reed back with me on the show today. And we're super excited today to talk about "If They Only Knew," I put that in quotes. And it's really around, I think, primarily women and maybe women in midlife, but this can apply to so many people. And thank you so much for joining me again today. And of course, Raquel is responsible for the Heroine's Journey, that amazing blog, and she helps women, and we'll talk about all of that. Thanks for being here, Raquel. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me, Rebecca. I'm always excited to have a chance to chat with you on or off recording.
Exactly. We have a good time. You know, this kind of came organically, this topic. We actually were having a little chat, I don't know, a month or two ago, and we were just feeling this energy, Raquel, about maybe we were discussing our clients or just women we come across and just all the benefits of making, in this case, alcohol small in life and recreating a life. And we just kept saying, if they only knew. And yeah. So that's how we came to this. So as women, are we lying to ourselves and accepting less than we deserve? And I find that, I know for me, there was a period of time where that was happening. Can you touch a little bit about just about that topic?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, I talk about that a lot because that was the life that I lived. You know, like it's like we've become conditioned as women to accept the life that is presented to us or given to us or expected of us, not the life that we, you know, that is our true heart's desire. I mean, some women do, and I champion them. They are freaking warriors, and I love them, and I follow them, and I do what they do, because that's how I want to live my life. But it goes against the grain, and you get a lot of pushback when you do that. And to me, now that I see that as a guidepost, like if I'm not getting pushback, then I'm not doing something right.
Oh, if that, I like if that, that makes yes. if you're not, yes, what I hear is if you're not ruffling feathers and people, you know, the whispers or the, oh, look at what she's doing or what she's saying, right? Mm-hmm. Or how she's living.
Yeah. That's, and it's like I lived, you know, like a lot of women, I was raised to make a good impression, care what people think about me, and be pleasing, not controversial, not contradictory, not independent, not free thinking. I mean, yes, independent and free thinking. I mean, my mother's fiercely independent, and she raised both of her daughters that way. But to be independent in a way that fits in line with what society expects of you.
Yes, all those expectations.
Mm. Yeah. And it's like, you know, like so many of the women that I work with, we experience the same thing. Like we live our lives based on a model that was set out for us that we didn't choose. That was, you know, you're expected to be even to be a mother. Yeah. Some women choose not to be a mother. And I fully respect that. I mean, there was a time in my life when I chose not to be a mother and unexpectedly became a mother. Now that was the best thing that ever friggin' happened to me, but it wasn't the life that I thought I wanted at that time.
Right.
And then there is getting married.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, thank God a lot of that is changing, but you're right. There's a lot of that still, an expectation that girls are going to grow up,
be moms and get married.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I'm 53 years old now. I've never been married. I don't ever really plan to get married. I mean, he wasn't the right guy, obviously, and I knew that at the time. But when he proposed to me, I thought, this is all I've ever wanted, was to have someone to want to marry me, not to actually be married. And when he proposed to me, I did say yes, but I never intended on actually marrying him, because that was not something that I wanted.
And you were brave enough to go with that, you know, because people may have thought, why aren't you following through?
Yeah, it was, I don't know, like, I kind of didn't realize it at the time. I wasn't settling for, people have thought that I was too particular about the people that I dated. But it's not that I didn't date. I did date, and I met some amazing people, and I had relationships with like some of the most amazing men, but they weren't my men. They weren't my, you know, it wasn't my person. Not that I think everybody has one person. I think people have several people.
Yeah.
But they just weren't people that I wanted, that I could see myself spending the rest of my life with. Like, I'll spend a few years with you and take a lot away from that and grow from that, both of us, and then move on and explore what life has to offer, you know, maybe alone for a while or with someone else. Like, I never had to have a partner by my side. And I'm not speaking against that in any way. Like, I love love, and I see partnerships that just light me up, and I crave that sometimes. And then other times, and if I could find that kind of partnership that lit me up, I'm sure I would be a partner. And I have, from time to time, until I've changed or evolved or grown out of that partnership. I'm not opposed to walking away once I grow out of that partnership, if that makes any sense.
It does. And, you know, this is one of those things, if they only knew. I mean, how many women need to know that it's okay if something isn't working, like right now we're talking about relationships, that it's okay to question it and walk away from it, if that's gonna, you know, help you grow and evolve and expand as a human being. So many times, if we stay, I'm gonna use the word stuck, this is where perhaps we start, you know, going down the path of bad or habits that don't serve, like alcohol, to numb a situation where you're just really sad in a relationship like that. So here's a great, you know, lead in. What should women know? Just life experience, from your own life experience, even mine. I very young, got married very young and divorced very young. I remember being really scared to say this isn't working. And you know what? I was in my very early 20s, and I actually drank a lot over that.
Yeah.
Over that, over the fear, over the judgment about it, you know? So women need to know that there's options, and you don't have to numb yourself through them.
One of my mottos in life that has kept me sane and grounded through the most difficult things I've ever gone through. And I would like to say that leaving alcohol behind was the most difficult thing I've ever gone through, but it wasn't. There were a lot of painful times, very, very hard times, very terrifying times after that. That's just the way life goes. You know, these things get thrown at you. And my life motto is that everything is going to be okay, that I will be okay. And I just repeat that to myself when I'm in that kind of, you know, you're in full fight or flight, and you're making crazy decisions that are not based in reality at all. You're making them with all these crazy chemicals going on in your brain and your body. And that's how I ground myself, is to remind myself that everything is going to be okay, that I'm going to be okay. It might not be the way I want it, or it might not be the way I envision it turning out, but it's going to be okay. It will work out. And it has every single time. That doesn't mean it's not going to be painful. It doesn't mean it's not going to be hard. It doesn't mean you're not going to have to do a hell of a lot of work to get through it, but it will be okay.
That's really powerful, because it's so true. There's the work involved in it. Usually it expands our view of not just ourselves, but our place in the world, you know, yeah. To go through these really difficult times. And also, not only is it going to be okay, sometimes when you're in the thick of it, that seems impossible, I know, but also that you're not alone.
Yeah. Yeah. That I will admit, that is one that I struggle with.
Okay.
That I'm not alone. Because in those moments, I'm like the definition of the lone wolf. I'm
you are so a lone wolf, but you're also a go-getter lone wolf.
I am, and I'm very connected. But in those moments, well, actually, do you know what? I take that statement back, because when I this thought process is evolving as I'm talking, because uh-huh. when I say everything is going to be okay, it's not me that's going to make it okay. It's just, you know, and I'm not a religious person in any way, shape, or form. So I'm not even going to use the term God, but it's like the universe is going to look out for me. The higher self is going to look out for me, that everything is going to be okay. So I guess, yes, in those moments, I don't feel alone, because I'm in a way, when I'm saying like, everything is going to be okay. And sometimes that's super hard to believe in the moment. But then I take myself, when I don't believe it, and when I start to question it, in those like really, really shitty, tough moments, when I say to myself, everything's going to be okay, and then I look around and I'm like, how is it possibly going to be okay? Then I take myself back to all the other times that it's been okay, that I've been okay. So I have this little Rolodex of evidence in my mind, and I flip through that in a matter of 10 seconds. And that kind of brings me down and calms me down to know that everything is going to be okay. But it's not me that's going to make it okay.
Yes, I hear you. It's the belief that everything, because in that moment, it doesn't seem that way. And this kind of leads us into our beliefs, and sometimes limiting beliefs about situations and possibilities. And so this is a really important message about it's going to be okay. And it sounds like such a simple phrase, but with everything you just said, we realize there's a lot of layers to that. And And I also like that you said you've got the Rolodex of, well, look at this situation when I felt this way and look at how that turned out. Plus we can be flexible. I think that's another big one, like being flexible with opportunity, with different paths we can take. And especially when we remove, you know, like for me, the numbing of what I used alcohol for, anything that was difficult, anything that was uncomfortable, anything that felt like a conflict, I shied away from it. I did not, you know, that probably comes from a belief from the time I was young, perhaps, you know, just don't make waves, just, yep. You know, don't upset people. And these beliefs that we have, we carry into adulthood. It's just, it's incredible. So this topic of it will be okay. How in working with women now, like once they make the, whatever it is no longer serving them in life, to understand the options, how you can recreate your life. if that makes sense, or you're not living the life that you want to be living. Like what are some of those things, maybe just looking at if they only knew?
Well, one, I mean, the one that really pops in my head is, if I only knew just what I was capable of.
Yes.
If I even had a glimpse of what I was capable of doing, that's one that would have, I think that would have, like, we talk about that push and pull forward. Like sometimes you want something, but you're really pushing to get it. And it changes the game when you have something that pulls you forward, because the struggle to get there is so much easier when you're being pulled rather than pushing.
Yes.
And so that, I think that thing, like, if I only knew just what I was capable, if I even had an inkling of what I was capable of doing, that would have pulled me forward so much faster.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I also believe that we go at the pace that we're meant to go, and we, you know, we discover things when we're meant to discover them. We hear things when we're meant to hear them. Like, you know, Eckhart Tolle once, I heard him in an interview, and he said, like, you can read a book and it won't hit you. It won't land with you because you're not ready to hear that information. And then you'll read it again 2 years later, or 5 years later, or 10 years later. And all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, I wish I had read that before. I can't believe that. That's so profound. Whereas you'd already read that.
Right. It just didn't resonate.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah. You weren't ready to receive that information. So, like, I reread books all the time. I re-listen to podcasts all the time because I think there's something there that I'm just not ready for yet. It's not hitting me the way that I think it might hit me down the line.
Yeah.
And sure enough, it's like rediscovering something for the first, well, not rediscovering, it's like discovering something for the first time, because I'm now in a place where I'm ready to receive that information, that teaching, that instruction, that guidance, that leadership, whatever it might be.
Was it like that on your alcohol journey? Like you understood things differently later that you had heard maybe years before, but it just didn't?
Yes, because I've always been I've always been a seeker of knowledge. And in my years of drinking, I read a lot of books. And then I read those books again, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years into being alcohol free. And it's like I had never opened those books before, because everything was dampened by the alcohol. Everything was like, I myself, when I was drinking, there was a filter on what I would let in. Like it was, I don't even know how to put this into words really, but it was like, I would only allow my mind to open so much. Mm. Like I even had constraints on that. I had constraints on what information I would allow into my hemisphere, because I wasn't ready to change.
That's a big one. Yeah.
So it was like I had to put constraints on my mind, because I wasn't ready to change. And it wasn't until I was ready to change that I was willing to lower those walls, right, and let new information in. And that sounds, because it's like pieces of information did come in, because you can't, you know, you can't filter everything.
Right.
And those bits of information did have an impact, or I probably wouldn't have changed the way I was living at that time.
Right.
But it's almost like, you know, the universe puts things in your path. And it was like that, what I needed to see was being shown to me. The rest of the stuff was for future when I was ready for it.
Yeah, I like that. It's like almost like baby steps with knowledge, right? Learning. Yeah. And I think one of the things we needed to know, or if those listening only knew, what I hear is really to have patience with this process of anything new or any goal that you're working towards, with patience for yourself and your own learning, this is how the growth happens. And when you just said, you know, allowing bits of information, and it's okay to, like, sometimes we're not ready to hear certain things. We think we don't want to. It could feel scary, maybe. Mm-hmm. Is that the right word? We're fearful for the change. Change can feel uncomfortable, obviously.
Pretty much so. I think sometimes if you hear something you're not ready to hear, it can actually push you farther back.
True.
Because it's like, oh my God, I can't do that. I'm not capable of that. I'm not capable of changing the way that I think or you know, changing my belief system. I can't do that. That's too hard. And that pushes you back and you know, you drink another bottle of wine.
Yeah. And this is all part of the process.
Yeah. So it starts with cracks, not big, you know, big bay window openings. It starts with little cracks and a little bit of light comes in. And then that little bit of light starts to move around and work its magic. Mm-hmm. And then another crack. And that little bit of light starts to move around and work its magic. And eventually, you know, I mean, over time, you've got the big bay window and you're just wide open. You're receptive. You're willing to learn, willing to do the work, and willing to really take a deep and sometimes very often dark look at who you really are and be willing to change that.
And the beauty of looking at that really dark shadow, shall we say, of who we are, because there's always that part of us. That's the beginning of seeing what's possible also. And I think for me, the thought of another possibility, another way to be, that was huge. And especially when I finally understood, and I wish I had only known years ago, that there was nothing wrong with me.
Oh, yeah. Goosebumps.
Did you have that too? Like, there must be something wrong with me.
I did. Yeah. It's when you're willing to have that look inside yourself, it's to be done with grace, not judgment.
Repeat that. I think that's huge.
Okay. Can I remember what I said? When you're willing to have that look inside yourself, it's to be done with grace and not judgment, because all of you is all of you. And the dark parts and the light parts make up the beautiful, perfect person that you are. Mm. And the dark parts are there for a reason, and they have helped you along the way. And the light parts are there for a reason, and they have helped you along the way. So it's about, you know, but you can't learn about the dark parts if you're not willing to look at them and what they're there for, because they're there for a reason. So when you look inside with grace, it's like, it's, you're accepting of who you are. You're not looking at a part of you or a personality trait that you have or a, you know, a tendency that you might have that you look at with judgment and disdain and unacceptance. That's not going to work.
No.
It's like looking at it with grace and loving it as part of who you are.
Yeah. And I think we in our society have so much thrown at us that makes us feel shameful for not being, you know, X, Y, or Z. Yeah. And the message we're talking about here is, not only is there always hope, you know, for a better you, but this begins with, I love the way you put it, accepting all sides of ourselves, mm-hmm. and not trying to shame the dark side, because without that, we could not have learned.
Right.
So that's a big one for the women that we're speaking to. You don't need to look at any mistakes or, you know, things in our past that we wish we hadn't done or had done a different way. We can look at it with compassion, forgiveness, grace, and move on from there.
And that's the beginning of knowing you're enough.
Yes, because we are enough. We are enough. And sometimes we just have to repeat that or write it down, you know? I mean, some of us, depending on where we are on our journey in life, just cannot even imagine that we are acceptable the way we are, you know?
And that's a human problem. That's not specific to people that drink or women or midlife women or anything. It's every human being on the planet struggles with that at some point in their lives. Most of our lives is I'm not enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not this enough. I'm not lovable enough. Whatever it might be, but it boils down to I'm not enough. And it's in moments like that when you can look at yourself with grace and not judgment that you can get a glimpse of I am enough.
I am enough. And it's just that
simple. Okay the way I am.
Yes. And it's a starting point too. And I want to put that out there. Everyone is capable of, you know, becoming their best selves. So when it was scary for me to consider eliminating alcohol, and I'm going to talk about alcohol here because that was kind of my go-to, as I talked about previously, I wish I had only known to try it out sooner. We'll just start with socializing. Go out and socialize without drinking. What's something like that you wish you had known about just even that experience?
That's really good, because I wish I had known that I could live a better life without alcohol than I ever could with it. That I could socialize, that I could go to parties, that I could host parties, that I could go to bars, that I could go to restaurants, I could go to girls' weekends, I could do all of that stuff. And never miss alcohol and have way more fun without it, because I was never waking up hungover. I was never missing social cues like we do when we're drinking. I was never laughing inappropriately because I had missed the joke and just wanted to laugh to make myself sound like I was listening. Just embarrassing myself, waking up ashamed of what I had done, or did anyone see how much I drank? Just all of that was gone. The anxiety of social situations was also gone. Like I'm not saying I'm quite an introverted person, so I don't do well in big crowds. And I used to get a lot of social anxiety about going to functions of any size, really, unless it was with very specific people. And now I don't, but that didn't happen. I mean, it's been over 12 years for me now. That didn't happen overnight. That was something I conditioned myself to over the years. I pushed myself to go to these events, and I guess what? I was okay. Everything was okay. And at the end, I came out and I said, I did that. That's going in my Rolodex because I've done that. And I can do it even better the next time. And then the next time I went and everything was okay. And I put that in my Rolodex. And eventually I got this, you know, I built that muscle of just going anywhere I wanted to go and doing anything I wanted to do and never, ever, ever having to worry about alcohol.
Yeah. Or even, you know, feeling deprived because you weren't having it.
Never felt deprived.
No. And some of the benefits of showing up with that attitude and living that life is that you are fully present for those that you're speaking to in social situations. You know, we're not like, you already covered all the things that we could have been embarrassed about if we had been drinking or over drinking. And when you're not drinking, you just show up as you and you're fully present. And then, yeah, the next day, hangover free is like a major bonus. Yeah. What about traveling? I guess that's the same thing. You know, it's that same mindset. And you've traveled the world and you've become quite the adventurer, which is so fun.
Traveling is that, I mean, that's another thing, like that comes back to if I had only known what I was capable of. Like, so my son went to, he was my inspiration for doing my solo travel. About 5 years ago, my son booked himself a ticket to Europe and went to Europe by himself. He was 19 at the time. And as his mother, like, I was terrified for him. This is a, you know, kind of a sheltered young man. He was very quiet, had really high anxiety. And I thought to myself, oh my God, he doesn't have the street smarts to be traveling by himself. Like, this is insane. But at the same time, I can't stop him from doing this. I have to let him do this. Even if he falls flat in his face, he has to do this and everything will be okay. And at the time, I remember it was kind of like this duality of, oh God, I wish I had the confidence to do that. Or I wish I had the gusto to just hop on a plane by myself and go to places where I didn't speak the language and I didn't know anybody. And then the other part of me was, oh, I could never do that. Oh, I could never do that. Oh, think of all the things that could go wrong. Oh, think of all the things that would go wrong. And then 5 years later, well, actually 4 years later, I bought the ticket and got on the plane myself. And I traveled for a year by myself to countries where I didn't speak the language, where I didn't know anybody, where so many things could have gone wrong. And sometimes they did, but they were okay. It all ended up okay. And I had the time of my life. I'm back home now in Canada for a few months with my parents. And then I'm going back out again for another year.
What's the plan?
I don't know. I don't have one yet.
I love it. She just takes off and goes, the wandering nomad that yep. she is.
Not sure where I'll go.
Well, and even with that of, you know, taking off and going to other countries, I know you spent a lot of time in Latin America. How amazing. I'm jealous. I love travel as well, but I try to do as much of that myself as possible. But, you know, if you had been drinking and traveling like that, it would have been a completely different experience for you.
Completely different is too mild a statement. Mm-hmm. Like it, I just can't imagine dulling and dampening and numbing out the experiences that I had and the feelings that I had and the, you know, the emotions that I had and the things that I learned about myself and about other people and about other cultures. It just, like, the thought of dulling that down in any way with alcohol just makes me so sad.
Wow. And so sad. And yet, and then on the other hand, so grateful that that's not where you live anymore in that yeah. space. That's yeah. amazing. What I wish I would have known is sometimes for myself, you don't present your best self when you drink and you maybe are meeting someone or you there might be a possibility for, you know, a good friendship may turn into something romantic, maybe not. But what can we tell anyone who feels like, oh, I can never go on a first date? I mean, what do you wish they knew about that?
How to make it? I mean, dating alcohol free, which is about to lead us into another segment about sex, which I'm very excited to talk about.
Good. I thought I would take baby steps and do dating, then we'd go into sex. But yes, we definitely need to talk about that.
Yeah. So dating alcohol free is that was something that, you know, I just had to put on my big girl pants and jump in because it was terrifying. You know, like it all ties into I'm not enough. So now here I am presenting myself raw and open with no alcohol filter, with no alcohol shield, with no alcohol defenses, which, you know, those are all false anyway, but that's what
true,
that's what
but
I
those
thought
are the
I
stories
was
we
with.
Tell ourselves, you know.
Exactly. So here I am going into these experiences and I've just got me. And me is going to have to be enough. And I'm either going to get to the yes or the no sooner.
This is true. Yeah.
Rather than prolonging it.
So you're not wasting time. Yeah.
Not wasting time. I'm not wasting my time or their time. It's, you know, this is me. This is who I am. And also, do I now there's more thought into, do I like you? And are you someone I want to put my time and investment into rather than, oh, I hope they like me?
Yes. Important. That's such an important distinction. You're choosing. Yeah. You're not waiting to be chosen.
Yeah. It's now two people presenting themselves.
Yes. And empowering.
And deciding, do these two people choose to spend time with one another? And let's get to the yes or no sooner rather than later.
Right.
rather than dragging it on.
Yeah. I like that. Okay. So let's get to the sex part. I know that for many, many years, I felt that I needed a drink to feel, I believed I could feel more desirable or less, self-conscious, all those things. And I remember the first time, you know, so for me, it was in a marital situation, but, you know, for years when I stopped drinking, I had been drinking my entire adult life. It was almost like, you know, virgin alcohol-free sex for the first time, you know, in my sixth decade of life. It's like, it's crazy to think, but I remember feeling nervous, like I'm going to be literally naked in every way, right? Like I'm not numbing anything. And what I wish I had known was that just like in a social situation, you're more present. You're more able to be giving and given to. What's your experience or opinions about that?
Well, my experience is actually kind of funny. So I had been dating, I was alcohol free, and so was the man that I was dating. And we had been dating for a few months and we decided to go away for the weekend, which means we were going to have sex. We hadn't had sex yet. So I had not, at that point, I had not had sober sex.
Okay.
And I was in my 40s before. And that, I think it was in my 40s. That was the first time that I can remember having sober sex.
Okay.
So for me, it was the first time because they are at opposite ends of a very wide spectrum, drunk sex and sober sex. So leading up to this weekend away, I, like a couple of weeks before, I started having these, like this crazy anxiety and bordering on panic attacks. And I hadn't experienced that since I was drinking. Because when I stopped drinking, all of that went away. And I went to my doctor and I'm sitting in my doctor's office and I'm explaining to her, like, I don't know what's going on. I'm having this crazy anxiety and I can't take anything that's addictive. Like, what can I do? And as I'm having this conversation with her, she's asking me, like, you know, has anything changed in your life? And I said, oh, I'm going to have sex.
I love it.
And she started laughing. And she said, well, after you do that, let me know if you still have the anxiety. And if you do, then we can treat it.
Oh, my goodness.
And I didn't have the anxiety afterwards. It was gone.
You didn't have it. And no. Would you say that you felt, well, I know you must have, you were just much more present, right?
Oh, it was an unbelievable experience. It was honestly like I had never had. I had gone through the motions of having sex many times before, but that was the first time that my physical and emotional and spiritual body were all present and in the same room for the performance. Like it was,
yeah.
It was amazing.
More meaningful. Yeah. So much more
meaningful. So much more meaningful. And so much more, like, without to get too graphic, you know, alcohol numbs your nervous system. And when two people are having sex, that's like, you've got millions of nerve endings coming together. And when that's numbed, it's just like, you can't even compare it when it's not
really good.
Like when it's, like when you're fully present and you're actually feeling everything that's going on in such an intense and profound way. Like it's, it's really amazing.
Yeah. I love the way you put that. That was, you know, we're human beings and we all, it's not just like a animalistic ritual, you know, it's like when you really are able to, I like the way you put that. And also the point about our sensations, because they're not numb, it's going to be so much more intense. And it's also, I think, even getting to that point, having this curiosity about it all, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's like, here we are, adult women, well into life. And it's almost like we're little girls when those first experiences happen like that, when you become alcohol free, you almost become a little kid playing for the first time and dabbling in this experience, like maybe you haven't for years and years and years, you know? So that's a really awesome thing to look forward to.
I think it goes from you have to rediscover what it is you want, what you like, what lights you up. And I'm talking in the realm of physical intimacy.
Yes.
You're rediscovering what really lights you on fire, what you want. And you are kind of going from that, you're in that discovery phase. And if you're open to it and you're curious about it, like, oh my God, the possibilities, let's just say, are endless.
Talk about a high. That's a natural high.
Exactly.
This is a natural dopamine hit going off. And you know, it's not the artificial one, because, you know, our brains are made to release these chemicals when these pleasures, you know, are happening. And this is really kind of enlightening here, but you're absolutely right. So that's it, ladies, with the sober sex, if you will.
It is off the charts.
I love it. We're going to have to just do a whole thing just on SEX. That's a really fun, if they only knew. That's great. What about our relationships with family and children? What is something
that's good? Because, it's relationships with family is so delicate and tenuous could be the right word in some situations.
And challenging. At least sometimes.
And very challenging. Really, no one can push buttons like family.
Right.
In fact, I think family has its own set of buttons.
I agree.
And I think that for me, being alcohol free, showing up as myself, coming into myself, growing into the woman that I was meant to be, has given me the ability to set boundaries with family that might ruffle feathers. Well, not might, does ruffle feathers, but it creates a healthier environment. And I don't even like the word boundaries. Let's say, because boundaries, I think people often use boundaries to keep themselves in.
Mm.
So let's say I set standards for how I set standards of how I'm willing to be treated.
Ooh, okay.
How I'm willing to treat other people.
Yes.
Behaviors that I will be present for and not present for.
You're just so much more clear when you're not drinking about those things, right?
Exactly. And you have the ability to say, no, I don't need to do that. Like, say there is a, I'm trying to come up with an example because I know what I'm talking about, but to convey that to other people is difficult. So let's say, this is tough. Let's say there's a family barbecue and the barbecue is for 3 hours. And then there are certain family members that maybe you don't, and, you know, perhaps I'm speaking from real life experience here. Mm-hmm. There are certain family members that you don't necessarily get along with very well that are saying, you know, like, why don't you come over? So you're in town for this barbecue. And they're saying, you know, why don't you come over and spend the day with me tomorrow? Mm-hmm. And you know that that interaction is not going to be healthy for either of you.
Right.
And now I have the ability to say, no.
Yeah. Like, thanks.
And that's it.
Thanks. And it just, yeah.
Right. Without making up excuses, without trying to make them feel better, because that just muddies everything.
It does. And in the past, you may have gone because you felt guilty.
100%. 100%. I would have gone and it would have been.
I can relate. Really, yeah. A lot of times we're conditioned. You know, it goes back to the don't ruffle feathers, don't make people feel bad. And I think when we are living our best life and we're present and we're learning and we're understanding ourselves so much better, we're able to do that so much more eloquently too. You know, before yes. I may have done it, but then I would have maybe been resentful. And now I'm mm-hmm. right. Our choices are affecting how we're going to go through life. I think almost anyone can relate where, you know, anybody that has a family, of course, is challenged by we're all human beings and we're not all going to get along. But we can still be polite and loving and show up, but we can also excuse ourselves when it's time to do that without any need to feel shameful about it or bad about it. What about with children, with our own?
Oh, well, I've discovered something about myself in the last few years is because I've never considered myself to be a people pleaser.
Okay.
But I am a family pleaser. Okay. So I am a people pleaser when it comes to family. And I think a lot of us are like, we just don't want to, you know, you want everyone to feel good. You don't want to hurt people's feelings. You want to do things that make people happy. And there's nothing wrong with that. But know when you're.
Don't do it at your expense, your own mental wellness expense.
Don't do it at your expense and don't do it to make yourself feel better.
Mm. Anyone listening, you have the permission.
Yes.
Yeah. And you know, I know that sounds so simple and like, so, you know, like, well, of course, but you know what? Many times we don't even see that, you know, like we get in our own way. We don't see that we're not allowing ourselves to design what it is we want to do with our time that we have. And yeah, and you're not coming across at all as to, you know, like that we're not loving towards these people or that we care about them. It's a matter of we also have, you know, our own dreams, goals, aspirations, and we need to keep that at the forefront too, of because that's going to bring us a sense of well-being, and so important. So I love, you know, the reason for the podcast too that I love is just talking about hard things, and we could talk about each one of these. If they only knew. And we just touched a little bit on each one of these. And what I want to leave everyone with is Raquel is a certified coach, and you're going to tell us where people can find you. But if anyone just wants to, you know, dabble in a little deeper with any of this that we've just began to, you know, scratch the surface on, where can people find you, Raquel?
They can find me at my website at RaquelReed.com. They can find me on Insta, the Alcohol Free Nomad Coach. And I'm also on Facebook under Raquel Reed Coaching. And I've got a free course on my website. You'll find the if you go to my website, you'll find the page. It's called Rise. And it is kind of the foundation for all of the stuff that we talked about today. A lot of the stuff that we talked about today. It's the foundation. It's a foundational course. It's a 4-week course.
Okay.
It's not a tremendous amount of work. So it's not, you're not going to be hard at it for 4 weeks, but it's spread out over 4 weeks because it's meant to be digested and integrated before you move on to the next one. And it gives you the foundational pieces of, you know, creating a life where you can set boundaries, where you can go and explore things that your heart's calling you to explore that you maybe think at this moment, oh, I can't do that.
Right.
You can do that. You absolutely can do that. And it's going to be okay.
Oh, I love it. And so this is the program. It's a 4-week program called Rise, which I love Rise. The title because what we're doing. Okay, that sounds really exciting. What an opportunity for people, you know, to expand and to work with someone like yourself who is so knowledgeable and caring. And I love the quote. I'm gonna leave us with the quote, one of the quotes you have on your site. You've always had the power, my dear. You just had to learn it for yourself.
That's
Al Franken,
amazing,
from The Wizard of Oz. And I think that wraps it up with what Raquel's all about. Thank you so much for joining me for this episode. I loved having you back.
Thank you for having me. I always enjoy chatting with you.
It's so fun. And you always leave us with such powerful things to think about and consider. So thank you. Thank you so much for joining me on this episode. And if any of it resonated with you, you can let me know by leaving me a review or sending me a message. And don't forget to spread the word and tell a friend. If you'd like to follow me, you can follow me on Instagram at Curious on Life or at Rebecca Guevara Wingler. And if you would like to learn more about the intuitive art workshops, please go to my website. Go to www.RebeccaGuevaraWingler.com. Stay curious.